It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Hillary Clinton immediately addressed the FBI director's letter to Congress as she made her closing argument to voters in Ohio.
And I am sure they will reach the same conclusion they did when they looked at my emails for the last year. There is no case here.
She was eager to attempt to shift the attention both the public's and the FBI's to Trump.
Of course, the people Donald Trump has around him include two men whose activities are reportedly being investigated for their ties to Russia.
At the White House today, spokesman Josh Earnest said the president still has faith in FBI Director James Comey, adding,
"The president doesn't believe that Director Comey is intentionally trying to influence the outcome of an election. The president doesn't believe that he's secretly strategizing to benefit one candidate or one political party."
Some of Comey's loudest critics are Democrats on Capitol Hill who just 3 months ago had nothing but praise for the FBI director after he said there was not enough evidence to prosecute Clinton.
"This is a great man. We are very privileged in our country to have him be the director of the FBI."
Republicans are continuing the questioning of his integrity, which they'll get no place on that.
The Senate minority leader upped the ante, accusing Comey of committing a crime. Quote, "I am writing to inform you that my office has determined that these actions may violate the Hatch Act, which bars FBI officials from using their official authority to influence an election. Through your partisan actions, you may have broken the law." Despite Democrats saying Comey's actions are unprecedented, they're forgetting when an independent counsel who was appointed by a Republican attorney general announced his decision to indict former Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger for his role in the Iran-Contra affair just days before Governor Bill Clinton defeated President George H. Bush.
The federal prosecutor at the time answered to the Justice Department, and the implication that President Bush at the time may have known more about Iran-Contra hurt him in those final days. Cap Weinberger was eventually not charged, but at that point, the damage was done.
All right, Jennifer Griffin on Fox last night, Sandy Rios in the morning with you. Yeah, lots to talk about. I was just thinking, I sort of long for that day when I get up early and I come into the studio and I look and, there's just not much news. And so we have to just sort of, chat, open the phone lines about the 1, 2, 3 stories that come up. But not yet. The election is one day from today. And so you can imagine that the news is exploding, and it's important, and we must stay engaged. Now, Jennifer just told you something that I told you yesterday. In fact, we played a clip of Al Gore and Bill Clinton back in 1994 and 96, thrilled that Caspar Weinberger was, that a special prosecutor brought charges against him the weekend before the election, which we believe swung the election to Bill Clinton away from Herbert Walker Bush, because Mr. Bush was actually moving up in the polls before that happened. And they were thrilled about it then, but not so thrilled about it now. But in a strange twist of things, and this is a strange twist, Jennifer played just a little bit of Josh Earnest talking, making a statement yesterday about Comey in support of him. And here's even more of that statement. This, again, coming from the White House now that has defended Mrs. Clinton. The president has been out on the trail. Michelle's been out on the trail. And so suddenly they are not joining in with the Clinton cacophony condemning James Comey. This is what Josh Earnest said.
"The president believes that Director Comey is a man of integrity. He's a man of principle. And he's a man of good character. The president doesn't believe that Director Comey is intentionally trying to influence the outcome of an election. The president doesn't believe that he's secretly strategizing to benefit one candidate or one political party. He's in a tough spot. And he's the one who will be in a position to defend his actions in the face of significant criticism.
Don't ask me what's going on, because I can't tell you. I could speculate. I find myself wondering, well, now let's see, what would cause the president to suddenly pull the rug out from Hillary Clinton and praise James Comey when Mrs. Clinton is out on the trail criticizing James Comey, and James Carville is voicing, you know, he's voicing what the left is voicing and Hillary's picking up. But this is a conspiracy between the Republicans and the KGB and James Comey. That's pretty much what he said on MSNBC. It's pretty amazing. So this is the defense that Mrs. Clinton is moving toward. It's, again, it's the Russians in collusion with the Republicans in collusion with Trump. You know, I think, are you not beginning to see that you have been lied to for so many years, decades really, when we heard the Al Gore, Bill Clinton clips yesterday, and they both were, you know, these young, fresh faces, and they seemed so convincing. Al Gore, we thought, was, you know, like the conservative of the two. And you see that it's just, it's propaganda and lies. It's just amazing. It's an alternate universe. It reminds me very much of the Soviet Union that lived in a sea of lies for 60 years. And so when finally the Soviet Union broke up and people began to hear truth, they were just stunned. I mean, stunned. I saw it firsthand because I was there doing interviews, but I digress. So we're living in an age where you don't know what's true and what isn't true. Now, you know, we still can't know the truth, and that's certainly what I'm committed to telling you each and every morning as God gives me strength. So the White House now is taking a different viewpoint. You know, I find myself wondering, well, I know that Mr. Obama was engaging in the same illegal conduct using a false name to disguise his identity, participating in the unlawful act of sharing information over an unsecured server, the president of the United States. So is he trying to be nice to Comey in case Comey maybe sniffs something out on him? I don't know. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud with you. All right, so a study by the Newsbusters said that, of course, the networks are all blaming Comey. They're saying very little about Mrs. Clinton's, you know, what the actual deed was. It's all, you know, terrible, no good Comey. And they sort of quantify it. They said in an analysis reviewed all the statements by reporters, analysts, and partisans, and they took the position on Comey and Clinton and found arguments against Comey, 88, swamped those against Clinton, 31, by a ratio of almost 3-1. So that's the tack. That's part of the defense, is to attack Comey rather than talk about what Mrs. Clinton has done. And I want to say that Judicial Watch has come out with another report yesterday. They have released 323 pages more of email. And those are email that Mrs. Clinton did not release, even though she claimed that she had released everything except those 33,000. They give some instances here. They give some exchanges. They appear to show that there was more pay to play. Foreign leaders who paid the Clinton Foundation big money and then were able to pick up the phone and make appointments to see Mrs. Clinton and ask for favors. I can't go into all of that right now, but it's more of the Clinton cash machine. It's just amazing. We also know now that, according to Tregoyne Phillips, writing for The Blaze, that an unnamed senior aide to Hillary Clinton has been a whistleblower. When Hillary was Secretary of State, the whistleblower claims that Mrs. Clinton left behind classified material, unsecured and unattended, in a hotel room following a trip to China. There's a lot of interesting details about this, but as the Diplomatic Security Corps, I guess, found it and reported it, and it was in May of 2010, but we're just now hearing about this. That's careless. You know, these are secrets that keep our nation safe. And this is the very reason why we have law after law after law. Any single solitary of the thousands of people who work here in D.C. and have high security clearances, they all understand that they put their necks on the line if they carelessly handle classified information. So Mrs. Clinton has a history of doing that. But back to Comey. And by the way, let me just interject that tomorrow we are going to have Andy McCarthy on, and we're going to talk about his perspective. Of course, he has a very close-up and personal perspective. He knows James Comey, and Andy was the prosecutor of the Blind Sheikh and the first World Trade Center bombing. And so he'll join us, and we're going to talk about all of this. And I'm eager to have that conversation. But yesterday on MSNBC, this was pretty amazing. Morning Joe and Mika Brzezinski were talking, and this is how it came out.
Watching this all weekend, I will say, first of all, everyone talks about what Comey did as being outrageous. This was a great, credible man with great integrity a week ago. So I don't really get that. What if there is something? We're not going to say it was so outrageous. The bottom line is, this all goes back to the server, something she shouldn't have done, something that was way more than a mistake, way more. And this is a self-inflicted, massive wound. And I just kept thinking how I've been on my horse going after Republicans and the Republican Party. You nominated this guy. You nominated Donald Trump. How could you do that? When I'm thinking Democrats nominated someone who was under an FBI investigation for having a private server, among other things. So here we are.
But I hear people this weekend, first of all, saying so much bad information, trying to spin wildly for Hillary Clinton. There's a Yahoo report. Well, the FBI officials haven't seen any of the emails. They have no idea what's even in there. Well, Wolf, you know, they don't even know what's inside of there. Well, Tom, they have no idea. Let me tell you something. If you really believe that, then please come to 30 Rock and get on my multicolored unicorn at noon, and we will fly to Atlantis together.
All right, I'm going to interrupt them. So that's Morning Joe, Mika Brzezinski. That's amazing to me, amazing that they made that comment. That's just a signal to me that she's in tremendous trouble. The FBI, Wall Street Journal, Brett Stevens, has written an article called Resign Mr. Comey. And he lays out the details, and I know we'll be talking about that a lot more tomorrow with Andy, but I want to read something to you. This is an article written by in PJ Media by David Goldman. And the title is The FBI Agents Who Stood Up for Rule of Law Make Me Proud to Be an American. We're going to put this on our Facebook page because it's that good. He said, one hears a lot of talk about America turning into a third world kleptocracy. I've worked in a lot of third world kleptocracies. And he goes on to explain it. And, of course, that means when everybody's on the take, bribes for everything, can't get anything done. This is the way of the world. This is the way the world works, apart from the United States of America. And then he goes on to say, somewhere there are a handful of FBI agents who decided to do their jobs to end the cover-up of the Clinton email private email server, which was theirs to let Hillary turn high office into cash cow. I don't know who they are or just how it happened, but some men and women told FBI Director James Comey that if he didn't step forward, they would. And they clearly had enough evidence to put Comey in a vice. We know this from Devlin Barrett's reporting at the Wall Street Journal, and I'm not going to read that excerpt, but he lays the facts out. He goes on to say, the unsung heroes of the FBI put everything on the line. They knew that they risked their careers, perhaps even their pensions. Their downside is that their kids may have to go to community college instead of a private university, and they may have to rent an apartment rather than buy a house. Those are the stakes for mid-level officials who go up against the system, but they did it because they had their jobs to do. It was their job and no one else's. If they didn't do it, it wouldn't get done, and they wouldn't stand for someone telling them not to do their job to protect the public. If you want to keep a republic, you have to sacrifice personal interests for the public good if you're called to do so. Those who choose to enforce the law or to fight fires or to serve in the military know that it may be their job one day to put their lives on the line, but same is true for every citizen in small ways. The rule of law rests on the moral equivalent of the thin red line. At any given moment, the fate of a country hangs on the handful of its citizens who happen to be take the incoming, the frontline troops, the Marines at Iwo Jima, the pilots at the Battle of Britain. The rule of law also rests on the moral equivalent of a thin red line. Those whose job it is to uphold the law must do so even at personal risk. What distinguishes a great nation from a banana republic is its ability to find enough of those people so that when the moment comes, they will do their job. Yeah, that's a great article. There's more to it. I have to tell you, I have the privilege of working with these kinds of people here in D.C. all the time. Pray for them, support them. I'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
This is Max Licato. As the Israelites prepared to cross the Jordan, God led the way, not soldiers, not Joshua, not engineers and their plans. When it came time to pass through the impassable waters, God's plan was simple. Trust me. The people did. Scripture does not veil their fear. The priests dipped their feet into the edge of the water. It was the smallest of steps, but with God, the smallest step of faith can activate the mightiest of miracles. And as they touched the water, the flow stopped, and all of Israel crossed over on dry ground. The Hebrews knew they couldn't lose. They had every right to celebrate. So do we. For Joshua's people, assurance came as they stood on dry land, looking back at the Jordan. For us, assurance comes as we stand on the finished work of Christ and look back at the cross. This is Max Licato.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. The Hillary Clinton email scandal has taken a dangerous turn. Sources tell Fox News they found evidence of state.gov and Hillary Clinton emails on Anthony Weiner's computer. Politics aside, state secrets may have been in the hands of a man facing a sordid sex scandal. Blackmail may have been a very clear and present danger, proving at the very least the Clinton State Department had significant judgment issues. And it raises questions about whether Mrs. Clinton has the temperament or judgment to be commander-in-chief. Over the next few days, you can expect the mainstream media to do whatever it takes to protect the Democratic nominee. They will dismiss the allegations. They will blame the FBI. And you can bet good money they will try to dredge up another unproven scandal involving Donald Trump. But in spite of their actions, one indisputable fact remains. Hillary Clinton is at the center of an FBI investigation. Donald Trump is not. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The PAC, Future 45, as in the 45th president, has already been running an ad comparing Clinton to Richard Nixon.
A secretive, paranoid politician who destroyed 30,000 pieces of evidence.
Now they have new fodder from WikiLeaks with an email the night before Clinton's first news conference on the email scandal showing advisor Philippe Reines declaring they would be, quote, dropping the bomb that 33,000 emails were deleted. Another email shows Clinton's own chief strategist Joel Benenson wrote in February 2015 the campaign was, quote, dealing with brush fires from the Clinton Foundation. Benenson added it might be time to ban foreign donations. Then, 8 days later, Bill Clinton's top aide wrote to John Podesta cryptically, foreign government donors, all the money is in, including at least $12 million Fox News first reported that Hillary Clinton raised from the King of Morocco. Today, the Daily Caller revealed the foundation may have gotten $28 million because millions more poured in from Morocco's state-owned phosphate company. Also new fallout today for interim DNC chair Donna Brazile, who tried to deny she gave the Clinton campaign inside information from CNN.
With the exact wording of a question asked at the March 13th CNN TV One town hall debate. Where did you get it?
You know, as a Christian woman, I understand persecution, but I will not sit here and be persecuted because your information is totally false.
New email emails Today's show while she was a CNN contributor, Brazil said of questions from that town hall, quote, "I'll send a few more." And before CNN's March debate in Michigan during the water crisis, Brazil told a Clinton aide, one of the questions directed to HRC tomorrow is from a woman with a rash. She will ask what, if anything, will Hillary do as president to help the people of Flint? The network today announced on October 14th, CNN accepted Donna Brazile's resignation. We are completely uncomfortable with what we have learned about her interactions with the Clinton campaign. Trump told Fox that Brazile should also resign from the DNC.
The system's rigged when Donna Brazile can get the questions to a debate and can give those questions to crooked Hillary Clinton.
All right, that was Ed Henry last night on Fox. You know, the deceit and the dirty tricks. Dirty tricks doesn't seem to capture it to me. It's corruption at the deepest level. It's collusion. It's just never ends. And, you know, we've talked a great deal, I think, at least I've alluded to problems on Facebook. For instance, our Facebook page, you will notice if you dialogue with people that some people will come on and they will claim to be one of you. They are conservatives. They'll say, my son served in the armed forces, and therefore you're a dirty rat because you believe this. You know, they say they'll claim a status, and I know it's confusing. Some of you then don't push back or don't argue because it's very confusing. I get this, of course, on my Twitter feed. I get vile, horrible things, threats, personal, just unbelievable, unspeakable, really. There's no way I can read them. But there's something to this story. Recently, I have to say, before I introduce our guest, David French, who was the intellectual who writes for National Review, a great writer, highly respected. He is the person identified by Bill Kristol a few months ago as the person willing to run for president. And so David was writing. He hates Trump. He's a never-Trumper. And so David wrote a long article published just 10 days ago, actually, titled "The Price I've Paid for Opposing Donald Trump." And he describes things coming into his Twitter feed. It's not just the Twitter feed, but he said, "I saw images of my daughter's face in gas chambers with a smiling Trump in a Nazi uniform preparing to press a button and kill her. I saw her face photoshopped into images of slaves. By the way, she's black. She's adopted. She was called a," I'm not going to say these words because I don't know how, but they're bad words. "She was called two different bad words. The alt-right unleashed on my wife, Nancy, claiming she had slept with black men while I was deployed in Iraq and that I loved to watch while she had sex with black bucks. People sent her pornographic images," and it goes on and on. And then, of course, he goes on to say, I think, what is the most egregious part of this article, and that is, let's see, I'm going to read the exact. He says, "The twin pillars of the alt-right, Trump and Breitbart.com." So David French, in this article, claims that it's Donald Trump and his followers, it's Breitbart, they're part of what's being called the alt-right, and he is claiming that all of these horrendous attacks toward his family are coming from Trump supporters. Well, was it? I don't know. But we're going to talk to Rachel Alexander because she might have an opinion about that. Her new article is called "AstroTurf: Outrage Machine of Paid Trolls Floods Social Media to Counteract Negative News About Hillary Clinton." Rachel is the former Assistant Attorney General for the state of Arizona, among many other things. She's a senior editor at The Stream, and she joins us in a very early morning radio interview from Arizona. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, and thanks. I was just telling my husband, for the rest of my life, as long as I'm on this side of the country, I will always have 5 a.m. interviews, so it's okay.
That's true, you will. You're going to have to move further east to make this work. Rachel, I read your article with great interest yesterday, especially coming on the heels of the David French article, but let's not talk about David yet. Let's talk about, you have looked into the covering, what's going on here exactly. You found a lot of things out, so I'm just going to turn you loose. What's behind all of this, and how do you know there are paid trolls?
And I have to add, I have had another article that just came out, too, on how the left is behind the alt-right. So I'd love to address that as well. And okay. I want to point out, too, my background. I've been in social media forever. I've got the Americans for Prosperity Award for online activism, and I worked at GoDaddy Software years ago, so social media and figuring out these people, I used to do tech support, is a hobby of mine, actually. So
okay, you know, all right. Yeah. I need you to come help me. I'd love to have somebody like you on my team, I'll tell you. All right.
All right. It's so much fun. But anyway, so what I've discovered is that, you know, there's a huge movement on the Hillary campaign to go and make up all these fake online accounts and to go to pretend to be her opponent. So, you know, during the Bernie Sanders campaign, they made up these fake accounts pretending to be Bernie Sanders supporters and trying to make them out to look like to be a bunch of racists. And they admitted it. They basically admitted it. They had this press release come out in, was it April or May, where they said, you know, we've created this pact called Correct the Record, where we're going to pay supporters to come out and defend us against Trump's attacks. And they put $1 million into it. They were so successful that they've increased it to at least $6 million. And they admitted back then, they said, if we're that successful, we're going to use the same tactic in general. So that's exactly what they're doing now. I've got a second article about the troll accounts. I don't know if you got my first one or my second one, but I now have two out. In my second one, I go and identify some of the Twitter accounts and give you tools how you can spot them, you know, such as they have no followers because they've never bothered to put any time into getting Twitter followers. So that's that. And by the way, I have another radio interview in about 4 minutes, so I got to wrap this up fast.
That's not good.
Oh, wait,
that
wait,
part's
it's
not
that,
good.
I'm sorry. It's at 45 minutes after the hour, I think, or 40 after the hour. Keep my alarm off early. So I got at least 10 minutes.
All right. I don't have your second article. And Rachel, let me have you slow down just a little bit. You said one of the signs is that they have no followers. I also noticed that they don't, you know, their posts seem totally random and fake. They never seem you can't actually tell when you go on, you know, to their home, whether it's a Twitter account or a Facebook account, you can actually tell when you look at it that this is not a real person.
Right. They are as anonymous as possible, and that's why similarly with the alt-right accounts, I believe they're all fake as well. There's never a real name. There's never a real photo. Their tweets are only about one thing and one thing only. You know, in the case of the Hillary trolls, it's anything to support Hillary. You know, in the case of the alt-righters, it's generally anything that just sounds, you know, nasty and racist and pro-Trump because they're trying to get people to think that if you're pro-Trump, you must be racist.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, too, that you point out is that it's not just defending Hillary. They claim they're defending Hillary, but they get into the most, they attack, they are evil, it is wicked. And you have identified some of them. I mean, some of them have actually been Clinton campaign staffers. You talk about an Adam Parkhominko, who was on Reddit, and he was he warned people, he threatened people that were supporting Trump. He said, warning, participation in this slanderous witch hunt will result in legal action. Mrs. Clinton has been made aware of your childish attempt to slander her and her supporters. There will be consequences for your actions. So then people start looking. I guess they found an address for him. He sort of finally came around to admitting that his name was Adam and that he is a Clinton staffer. So we have direct lines.
And compounding it, he said he was a Bush supporter. See, they lie and they say that there are people on the right.
Yeah, you know, I would be interested to know, well, you know what, let us develop this a little bit further. I'm going to reiterate, they really came after the Bernie supporters. And they wanted to create, you said this, but I want to repeat it because I thought it was really good. He said they wanted to paint Bernie supporters as that they were all racist, sexist, young males who harass people online. And they did get a lot of hits. You know, they did take, that was a narrative that was created against Bernie supporters.
That's
so they
right.
succeeded.
They called it the Bernie Bros, and it came out in the WikiLeaks emails from John Podesta that they were trying to create this false caricature of these racist young men who went around sexually harassing women online.
And also, you have not mentioned the person I think who's at the very top of this is David Brock, who, of course, was formerly an alleged conservative who's flipped over and started supporting the Clintons a number of years ago. He's a former right-wing activist, and he created Media Matters, which, of course, monitors this show and others and has caused tremendous grief for conservative media outlets. So David is kind of the brain behind this, isn't he?
He is. And, you know, it sounds like you know, since he's probably written about you, too, you know. he is one of the most vicious, nasty, vile people there on the left. And, you know, it just does not surprise me that he's the one behind all this mud raking and digging all this stuff up and, you know, actually paying people to do this. And what irritates me is, you know, it's one thing to create an anonymous account to help your candidate, but it's another thing to deliberately lie and say, I'm a middle-aged Asian woman and I'm supporting Hillary. I used to support Bernie and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I mean, these people just lie blatantly. It's typical soloist tactics.
Rachel, are you familiar then with David French's article in National Review on October 21st, where he claims it's Donald Trump supporters who are doing these terrible things to his family, and he quotes the things that they're saying to him? Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. My husband's the biggest David French fan, actually, and so I've been following this for a while, and it's utterly vile and just unbelievable how much they've gone after him, like the way they've gone after Ben Shapiro. You know, he says he's like the biggest victim of anti-Semitism on Twitter now. But again, I just disagree with him. I don't think it's conservatives on the, you know, so-called alt-right going after David French. I truly believe it's the left disguising themselves as alt-right conservatives.
Oh, I totally agree, and that is the point. I see the signs here, because usually when I get these comments, they are unimaginably vile. I always feel, and I'll speak as a Christian now, I just feel like I'm hearing from demons from hell. These are the things they think and would say, and there's a common thread of that. It's not ever just a criticism. It's vile. It's violent, wishing death and destruction on you and your family. And so I get, you know, I had for a time, Rachel, a lot of Nazi Twitter handles, sort of like coming on my Twitter feed and, you know, cheering me on as though, you know, they would agree. And so in other words, to create the impression that, you know, the alt-right, the Nazis love Sandy Rios. She's therefore a Nazi. So, I mean, it is really a big game, and it's a very dangerous one. Please say a word about, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, well, I was just going to say, you know, I've got over 8,000 friends and followers on my two Facebook accounts, and I've got over, I think, 18,000 Twitter followers. So I'll actually go, I polled them once. I said, you know, how many of you guys are on the alt-right? You know, I've got a lot of right-wing political friends, and a lot of them are really hardcore Trump supporters. Not a single one came forward and admitted. You'd think that at least one of all those thousands and thousands of friends I have across America would come forth and identify themselves as alt-right. I said it politely. I wasn't really. Not a single one would.
Yeah, so, see, from my perspective, unless you know something I don't know, the alt-right is another construct of the left, like the vast right-wing conspiracy. I would go on record saying here that I know the folks at Breitbart very well. I know lots of them. I know the Washington, D.C. team. I know Steve Bannon very well. Joel, the name just escapes me. Good friend of mine. Here's their Los Angeles. Joe Pollack, yes, is a Orthodox Jew. He's a totally practicing Jew. There's nothing alt-right about Breitbart. And yet this is the spin. And David French then repeats it in his National Review article. This is a damning thing that he wrote, a damning piece that's very misleading, Rachel. I think David has done a tremendous amount of, in his ignorance, he's done a tremendous amount of damage to Trump supporters. And I'll let you have the final word on that.
Yeah, I think that there is this brilliant strategy going by on the left to divide us. And so what they've done is they've manufactured this alt-right side, and they've tried to link regular websites like Breitbart. In one of my articles recently, I referred to them as the conservative side Breitbart, because, again, this is the left trying to make them look far, you know, far racist and all that. And they're successfully doing it. They're dividing, you know, some of the top intellectual conservative writers, you know, National Review, you know, against, you know, one of the most grassroots side of the party, Breitbart. And it's appalling what they've done. And again, I like all those guys as well. I really like David French. But I'm never going to stop talking out about how the left is manufacturing this. They have as many racists supporting Hillary as we have racists supporting Trump.
Well, we have to be smart. We have to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves, and to realize that we are in a war. I think some of our intellectuals have that's lazy. They think they have the luxury of just thinking their great thoughts, and we are in a battle. We are waging war, and they better get on the front lines with us. That's my personal opinion. We'll put this Rachel's articles on our Facebook page so that you can read and share for yourself. Rachel Alexander, thank you for your early morning time. We appreciate it.
Glad I could make it work. Thanks, Sandy.
All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi, after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we noticed with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
This is Brian Fisher of Focal Point. A historian once said that the laws of a nation emerge from its culture, and its culture emerges from its religious values. In other words, if we want cultural renewal and righteous laws, we must experience a spiritual awakening in our society. That's why every day on Focal Point, we talk about spiritual renewal, cultural renewal, and righteous public policy. Please join us.
Focal Point with Brian Fisher, weekdays from 1 till 3 Central on AFR Talk.
The AFA Journal helps you stay in touch with issues of the day. Articles by award-winning writers open your eyes with different perspectives. Shorter pieces document current trends. You'll find monthly columns by financial expert Dan Celia and AFA President Tim Wildman. Even the ads put you in touch with various AFA departments and other ministry organizations. Subscribe to the AFA Journal and stay up to date on the American Family Association and the culture war when you visit afajournal.org.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of 6, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Who is Huma Abedin? Is a short YouTube video that's absolutely required viewing, given the central role she's now playing in the myriad national security and legal scandals plaguing Hillary Clinton's campaign. Ditto the powerful position Huma would be expected to have in a new Clinton administration, perhaps as presidential chief of staff or secretary of state. There's even talk she would live in the White House. The video connects the dots, showing, among other things, Huma Abedin's decades-long ties to Abdullah Omar Nassif, a top Saudi financier of the global jihad movement, including Al-Qaeda, and the Muslim Brotherhood. That fact alone should have precluded her from getting a security clearance, let alone overseeing and mismanaging classified information and operations for a Secretary of State. So far, Who is Huma Abedin has over 1.3 million views. Is yours one of them? This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios, back with you. Well, when I hear Frank's commentary, then, you know, we are tracking on the same track this morning, because I hear all this discussion about Huma Abedin, and she looks like such a nice person, doesn't she? And she's been married to that terrible husband, right, Anthony Weiner, and now they've shared the laptop, and now she's in trouble because of him. And poor Huma, you know, I mean, she's now disappeared. There was a report that she was crying on an airplane. Poor Huma. So we feel sorry for Huma Abedin, don't we? Except for there is a lot about Huma Abedin that we need to know, and it is very likely that Huma Abedin is, in fact, I'd say it's more than very likely. going to play something for you that demonstrates it, that she's a Muslim Brotherhood operative who's infiltrated the highest levels of government. Why would I say that? I'm going to let this video speak for it. Frank just referred to it. It's called Who is Huma Abedin? And I'm actually going to play the whole thing for you. And we're going to put this on our Facebook page. But I want you to hear it. Who is this Huma Abedin, this beautiful, dark-haired beauty who's been with Mrs. Clinton since she was, I think, 18 years old, maybe 20? Who is she, anyway? Let's listen.
Her history and alarming connections are mostly unknown to the American people. Who is Huma Abedin? What do we know about Hillary Clinton's number one aide and sidekick for 20 years? Hillary spoke at Huma's wedding saying, "If I had a second daughter, it would be Huma." This presidential election decides who gets to run the most powerful country on earth, so it is obviously very important to understand the facts about Huma Abedin, as she may very soon become chief of staff in the White House. I'll be simplifying an intricate web of people, organizations, and events that unraveled over many years. All of this information and more is available online for anyone who has access to Google. Anyway, here is an unbelievable story of infiltration, unfolding before our eyes, and the most important aspect of this election that you definitely won't see on CNN. There are four main players in this: Hillary Clinton, Huma Abedin, Abdullah Omar Nassif, and Saudi Arabia. Huma was born in the USA. Then when she was 2 years old, her family moved to Saudi Arabia. They lived in Saudi Arabia for 16 years. Huma returned to the USA when she was 18 to study at George Washington University. Only after 2 years in the country, she became an intern for Hillary Clinton, and soon after started working full-time. Also in 1996, Huma was working at her family business, a journal by the Institute of Muslim Minority Affairs. The Abedin's family business is owned by the Muslim World League, Saudi Arabia's global organization that promotes violent Wahhabi Islam. They even share an office at 46 Goodge Street, London. Saliha Abedin, Huma's mother, and Hassan Abedin, Huma's brother, currently work there still. Abdullah Omar Nassif is one of the founders of the Muslim World League and served as vice president of the Saudi Kingdom Shura Council. He created Huma's family business along with her father. He also funded Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, as did Saudi Arabia, for many years. His organization was declared guilty of funding Al-Qaeda terrorism by the USA State Department. During the Holy Land Foundation trial in 2001, the FBI discovered that the Muslim Brotherhood gave over $12 million to Hamas, the terrorist organization. They also found the secret 18-page plan for the Muslim Brotherhood, which explains that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within. This document is available online in full.
All right, so that's the first far part of that. I'm hoping you're following this. We're going to put it on our Facebook page. Bottom line, Huma's family is deeply connected. They share a building with the Muslim World League, which is connected and founded by Abul Omar Nassif. He's one of the founders. He was a funder of Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. But let's go on with the next part.
One of the many listed organizations within the Muslim Brotherhood was the Muslim Students Association, which Huma was an executive board member on for 3 years. Only 2 years after Huma left, Anwar al-Awlaki, the Al-Qaeda member and preacher to 9/11 hijackers, became chaplain of the same Muslim Students Association that Huma was a part of. To make things worse, Huma's mother, Saliha Abedin, is a leading member of the Muslim Sisterhood, the women's division of the Muslim Brotherhood. All of these organizations share the same goal and tell us repeatedly in plain English. They want to destroy Western civilization and replace our laws with oppressive Sharia law like you see in Saudi Arabia. On 9/11, Abdullah Omar Nassif, Saudi Arabia, and Al-Qaeda tried to do just that. Where was Huma that day? The top funders of the 9/11 attacks created Huma's family business. Huma was officially working for the terrorists and Hillary Clinton the day those towers fell. Huma Abedin has never come forward with any information about her Saudi co-workers. Absolutely none of Huma's connections were mentioned by her during the investigations into 9/11. She has made no mention of her relationship to Abdullah Omar Nassif, the Muslim World League, Muslim Brotherhood, or her current status at her family business, which could be of unimaginable assistance to the FBI and the CIA. Huma's mother still works for the Muslim World League, yet Huma has made no effort to distance herself from her mother or her radical views. Saliha Abedin is a leading Sharia activist who has, for example, published a book called Women in Islam that claims secular man-made laws enslave women. It supports female genital mutilation, the death penalty for leaving Islam, the legal subordination of women, and the participation of women in violent jihad. Hillary Clinton has flown to meet with Saliha Abedin many times. Huma says that her mother considers her to be a big deal and is proud of her. Huma's absolute silence on all questions regarding her extremist ties says far too much. How can someone with such close links to terrorism be allowed access to our top secret information and have security clearances? Especially since it was found that Huma was accessing Hillary Clinton's emails and physical documents. The Clinton Foundation received over $25 million from Saudi Arabia, and they also funded 20% of her election campaign. Saudi Arabia's massive influence on the Clintons and Obama administration has not gone unnoticed. The damaging results of Islamist influence on the USA and Europe is worthy of another dedicated report, as this is just the tip of the corrupt iceberg. But you can no longer deny that Hillary Clinton is actively working with a global movement whose goal is to destroy Western civilization, just for the selfish benefit of money and power.
All right, let me interrupt just for a second. Let me just underline a few things. We have mentioned numerous times, in fact, the explanatory memorandum, which is that booklet that is in the words of the Muslim Brotherhood. It was found during the Holy Land trial. It was the playbook. It was the secret plan to overtake the United States. They say, in their words, to destroy their miserable house from within. And the Muslim Brotherhood, that is their stated goal. CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, is part of this. And yet we see CARE officials now, you know, meeting with the FBI to conduct investigations after the Orlando slaughter. A CARE goes into mosques and helps us, you know, figure out what's going on. CARE is so very helpful. This is part of the subversion. If it weren't for, really, I'm sorry, the word comes to my mind, forgive me, Mother, for saying it, stupid people on Capitol Hill, unwilling to actually face the facts on this, we could have stopped this a long time ago. I think of John McCain. Oh, Huma Abedin, she's marvelous, she's wonderful, she's such a sweet girl. Are you kidding me? And it's not just Huma, it's Homeland Security, it's the Pentagon. It's the choices of chaplains, Muslim chaplains over the world were determined by, in our military, were determined by a Muslim Brotherhood operative. It's the Muslim Brotherhood that scrubbed our training manuals for the FBI, for the Pentagon, for all the services who are trying to stop trainings for police in areas and states all over the country, where trainers, good friends of mine who are patriots, who have been training inside circles for a long time about what's actually going on, have been fired and disgraced. This is the nature, and Republicans have turned a blind eye to it. Almost, I would say, they are as complicit as the Democrats. They may not be perpetrating it, but they are complicit. And let's listen to the last part of this. Who is Huma Abedin?
Huma is the previously hidden link between the Clintons and Saudi terrorism. Dozens of other people and organizations were left out of this for length. Any rational person should have high standards of evidence for claims such as this. So here is the fastest way to prove Huma's tie to Abdullah Omar Nassif that you can look up for yourself and is sourced by their own websites. Start at the website of Huma's family business, the Institute of Muslim Minority Affairs. See that Huma's mother, Saliha, and Huma's brother, Hassan, currently manage this company. Now go to the website for the Muslim World League, owned by Saudi Arabia and Abdullah Omar Nassif. Note the address is listed by their website, 46 Goodge Street, London. Now, back to Huma's family business. If you scroll down, you see that same address, 46 Goodge Street, London. Clearly anyone can prove in seconds that Huma's family business is owned by Saudi Arabian terrorists. Their own websites make no secret of this fact. There are no more excuses for Huma's silence. She has had years of opportunities to distance herself from terrorists and radical views, but would rather simply hide. The American people demand an explanation from Huma Abedin and Hillary Clinton before the election. One simple, straightforward question needs to be answered. Did Abdullah Omar Nassif create your family business? And were you working with him in any capacity on September the 11th, 2001? Yes or no? This year marks the 15th anniversary of the day Al-Qaeda murdered 3,000 innocent citizens. Let's not forget about it so quickly. Huma's security clearances should be revoked until she or Hillary directly address this national security threat. Unfortunately, in the meantime, because of the overwhelming silence and lies, it appears to be true that a vote for Hillary Clinton will be a vote for Huma Abedin, the Muslim Brotherhood, Saudi Arabia, Al-Qaeda, and a wish for the complete destruction of the United States of America.
All right, the video is called Who is Huma Abedin, and we're going to put the link on our Facebook page so that you can look at it, visualize it, you can see the names again, you can see the connections, and you can pass the word, pass this on. People must see this because you're not hearing this on the night news. I saw last night on the 5, I saw them talk, you know, feeling sorry for Huma because, you know, her husband's Anthony Weiner, and, you know, this device belonged to him, and of course, you know, you know, it's just too bad that a young girl like that has to be married to a man like that. And we all feel so sorry, don't we? Ladies and gentlemen, it is time to wake up. I'm telling you, we are at war, and we are at war. Put on your big boy pants and stop complaining about small things and start fighting. This is time to be vigilant. This is a time to be smart and wise and equip yourself and tell your children. And don't be ashamed. Don't be shy. Don't be worried about your own reputation. Our future is at stake. Your children's future is at stake. The country is at stake. And we are to fight. You know, America is our home. And America is our family. You know, we have families where we have the same name, and we have man and wife and children. And that is the block. The basic block of society, but all these families form then a country, and then the country by extension is your family. Language and culture and the land that you live on, there is nothing wrong with loving your family. In fact, as I understand it, the Bible says that if we don't take care of our family, we are worse than infidels. And so it is not in the place of God, not that we ever misunderstand that our ultimate home is in heaven, that we have citizenship in a place far greater than this, that our earthly battles are not the ultimate battle. We know that. But that doesn't mean we don't fight to protect and preserve our families. And I'm telling you, each and every one of you, your children's lives and your grandchildren's lives will be very different if you don't fight this battle. I don't think many people have any idea what it looks like not to be free. God has put me on the front lines in many countries where I saw people in prison for their faith, paying a terrible price for the lack of freedom. Do we want to live that way, really? It's time to stand up and fight while we can still fight. So the election is a week from today, and I've given you as many tools, and I still will, until next Monday night at midnight. I will be giving you as much as I can to equip you to know how to fight this battle. Who is Huma Abedin is the video. We'll put it on Facebook, and you can share it. I hope that you will do that. Thank you so much for listening, and let's pray on our knees this morning, and then up and back at the fight. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.